Hey everybody, Brian Beeler coming to you with the Storage of View podcast. This week we've got a great guest. So we were just talking containers with Roblox not long ago, and there's nobody probably that knows more about containers than today's guest, Shang Leon from Rancher Labs. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Brian. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here too, because containers are such a big conversation, but I think there's a lot of unknown, right? Because you guys know the stats better than me. Something like 85% of organizations last year were running containers, but that might be one, or it might be everything in containers. So I'm curious if, just starting at a real high level, you can set up for us the way you're looking at containers, and then we'll get into Rancher, don't worry. But I'm just set the table for us on your perspective of where we are with containers today.
Yeah, I think, Brian, you're spot on, because you have to be careful when, especially when they say 80, 85, 90% of the organizations are using containers or they're using Kubernetes. But for example, if one of the sysadmins downloads one copy of Docker,
yeah, that counts, right?
On his company issued a laptop, does that count, right? So at the end of the day, what percentage of workload, production workload, has already been containerized and running it in production? I think that's a very that's a much better measure. And we don't, I mean, generally, I don't think the industry has a good idea. You know, anecdotally, like at least looking from our enterprise customer base, I think that percentage is still very low. A couple of years ago, I would tell you they're in low single digits. Now maybe they're a little bit higher, but honestly, we haven't even done enough surveys or things like that ourselves. But I remember there was one particular very large financial services organization, and I think they were running a few hundred applications on Rancher at the time. But across the whole company, there are over 10,000 applications. So that kind of gives you an idea how early we really were.
In the applications, so when we think about sometimes what happens at the enterprise, you know, we think of Office applications and we think of databases like SQL Server and all your Oracle, all your normal variety applications. But what containers really did a number of years ago is, like you talk about the one system admin who starts to play with it on the laptop, the application developers, these born in the cloud, which I don't think we say anymore, but was the thing that we said to describe these type of workloads. Right, cloud native now, right? Yeah. Back in the day, the idea was Uber and Lyft and all of these services that were starting in the cloud were using technologies that weren't VMs and they weren't SQL and they were something else. And it was initially a little bit scary because a lot of the more tried and true enterprise guys didn't understand that. But when you talk about these applications, you clearly have a phenomenal handle on it. Is it still just company-owned, company-developed applications that can fit in containers? Or are there applications that organizations are consuming from others that they're containerizing in their infrastructure when they run it themselves? What does that look like at this moment?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we're right at the cusp of that transition. The containers and Kubernetes really found its initial traction from folks who develop their own applications. Because when you talk about applications, we're not talking about desktop applications or mobile applications that runs on the client. We're talking about these things that run on the server that provides a web interface or at least a mobile services backend. So so those things, if you think traditionally, they were deployed on physical machines or virtual machines or in the cloud. But now the nice thing is, I'm sure most of the audiences know, that the great thing about containers is once you package it, you can ported everywhere. It'll run everywhere. So that's really its major attraction. It's containers is fundamentally an application packaging format. And then and people in the early days, they really aren't any third-party applications that's packaged as containers beyond just your common, you know, open source packages like MySQL, Apache. Mm-hmm. Those things are available. But in the early days, you can't really expect your favorite, you know, third-party ISV to be available as containers. That's changing. I see these days, I mean, pretty much that's probably one of the biggest changes I've observed in the last few years is the container as a packaging standard has elevated from just something most used in DIY to something more used by established software vendors. I was very surprised. One of our customers mentioning they were using something from a company called Pega, and I think they're actually a very big company. I've never heard of them, but because I never used it, and then I, you know, they've been around for probably a couple of decades, and then I went to their website. Wow, everything is like packaged now as containers. So it's pretty exciting. I think finally we're at a stage where containers is not just for homegrown, you know, DIY kind of applications. There's a very strong third-party ecosystem, many of which these days are actually Rancher partners because they're all certified to run on Kubernetes and on Rancher.
So, you know, tell me a little bit about Rancher, because I think that's going to be important to frame this conversation. I've got so many questions for you. I can't wait to dig into, but before we get too far along, I'll let you at least give us the pitch for Rancher.
I think that's like important. 2 minute, pitch, high level overview of what we do. So really what's happening with containers is there's now a standard packaging format called, you know, it's a Docker container format. And then there's something also called Kubernetes. Kubernetes is the runtime engine for running containers. So the nice thing about Kubernetes, it just doesn't just run on one computer, it runs on multiple servers. So if you have a cluster, if your application scales, Kubernetes takes care of that. Kubernetes will take your container and run it on any infrastructure. So Kubernetes basically became a computing standard for infrastructure. You know, it's usually makes the analogy in networking, there are standards like TCP/IP, right? If you talk TCP/IP, you can plug in your Ethernet cable and it'll just work. And in computing, there really wasn't one. I mean, beyond just Intel architecture or something. When you get to the virtualization layer and platform layer, there's just a lot of flavors. You know, VMware VM and Amazon VM, although they're both basically x86 virtual machines, but they're not, you know, the image is different, their API is different. But now with Kubernetes, everything is the same. So organizations now all of a sudden started to adopt Kubernetes services from everywhere. It's so attractive, from your laptop to your branch offices to bare metal servers to virtual machine clusters to the cloud to the edge, like everywhere. And then Rancher is actually the platform that we developed. It's an open source platform used to manage all of these Kubernetes clusters, because for the first time, enterprise organizations can actually have a consistent really computing resources and all managed as part of a, you know, unified computing platform. And that is what Rancher is. It leverages Kubernetes as the computing standards and presents this unified computing platform to the enterprise.
So you've got a good perspective on this, and it sounds like why Kubernetes has been so successful is because it's developed this itself kind of as this standard. But, mm-hmm. you know, there are dozens maybe of ways to do containers and orchestrate the containers and manage them. Why was Kubernetes the winner there, or the current leader at least in terms of that?
Yeah, I think Kubernetes will be the leader for container management for will be the de facto standard for a while, because these technologies comes in waves, and usually if you know once it's established, it's actually very difficult to topple, until maybe someday there'll be something that takes the role of containers, then maybe Kubernetes will be legacy. But I think it was the right technology for the right time. First of all, it was good technology. You know, it was solid technology. It was based on something Google used in-house for many years. So it's really very solid. The other thing that led to its success was just the way it was marketed, and it was very open. It actually was contributed to the Linux Foundation and created an organization called Cloud Native Computing Foundation. So if you look at some of the early competing container orchestration technologies like Docker Swarm or Mesosphere, actually Rancher, we even built one ourselves. It's actually not that difficult to build a orchestration technology. It's much harder, number one, to do it right, do it well. Number two is to actually making it into a standard. So what all these other technologies, they were all like controlled by one vendor, and sometimes by a very small vendor. And there are concerns if you control by a very small vendor, you know, the viability is also in question, right? Whereas I think something Google did very well is made it very open. And you know, Rancher, you know, we're a small company, but we were still able to play a very significant role. We actually got elected to the board of CNCF, and I'm on the CNCF technical oversight committee. So it's a truly well run and open governance. I think that probably played just as a big a role as how good the technology was.
Well, the containers needed Kubernetes, don't you think, to bring a cluster of energy and excitement around that, and a air of professionalism for a technology that for a while was seen as Wild West? I mean, not unlike virtualization was back in its early days, right? There were plenty of people around that said, you know, virtualizing CPU and RAM and storage, you know, that'll never work. And obviously that's not been the case. But the same sort of argument against containers was there initially when, you know, Docker was the thing, and there was still a lot of variety of solutions and a lot of difference in terms of capabilities and reliability going on. And in fact, I remember the first KubeCon that I went to was the one in Seattle, I think maybe 3 years ago or 4 years ago. And coming into that from an enterprise lens, mm-hmm. I can see why a lot of people were, I don't even know if intimidated is the right way, but certainly scared by containers. Yeah. Because you look around, and to be fair, half of the exhibitors that were there were exhibiting science projects. This was not, this was not VMworld where it's large professional organizations. To your point, there's a lot of small companies and small clusters out there figuring out how these things work and solving all sorts of problems that in the enterprise have been solved, you know, solved, I use air quotes, for years. But things like data protection that when you look at the container world was, if not totally ignored, largely ignored, right? Because application developers are out there worried about their application and spinning these sort of transient containers up and down. They're not necessarily worried about, you know, data management and some of these other things. So I can see why it was like that. And then you fast forward a couple of years to the latest KubeCon, had, you know, I don't know, 12, 15,000 people. I mean, it's insane how much that's grown. And I think that, you know, the excitement and the support for Kubernetes has gone perhaps further than anything else in terms of solidifying the validity of containers in the enterprise. I'm curious as to your perspective as to how it's changed.
Kubernetes definitely made containers enterprise grade. You know, before Kubernetes, it was Docker, but Docker was primarily an application packaging and developer play. So they weren't, it didn't really have the true impact that Kubernetes had in enterprise computing. You know, after Kubernetes, it was very clear that the container platform was here to stay, and it actually had the potential, like I was saying earlier, by making all these different infrastructure platforms consistent. It just opened the door for enterprise to focus on a lot more important things. You know, if you're an IT organization, what really brings the business value to you is not to understand the finer points of how your on-premise environment is different from a cloud environment, right? Like, or how to make sure your application can fail over or can scale as the load changes on the application. Your enterprise organizations really wanted to allocate their very precious resources on actually enhancing the applications themselves, so that would advance their business. And I think Kubernetes in many ways enabled them to do that.
So yeah, I think you're right. And now we've seen this explosion of containers, and then we've probably, because of that, seen the importance of wrangling these containers and managing that as part of the broader infrastructure in an organization. And that's largely where you guys come in, right? And helping. Yeah. So what's the alternative? Well, before you get to that, at what scale do you need to be at with Kubernetes before something like Rancher or any of the alternatives becomes critical to managing that infrastructure?
Really at any scale, because Kubernetes is very, very good technology. Like I said, it's proven, it's actually scalable, it's reliable. But one area that Kubernetes fell short a little bit, even from the very beginning, was its usability. It is fairly advanced. You know, you were saying, Brian, when you got to KubeCon, especially in the early days, you know, the enterprise admins were confused. It is very different from, say, vSphere, which is one of the last great technologies that came into our industry, right? vSphere was very straightforward, if you think about it. It properly abstracts and replicates what a server experience is. If you know how to put together a PC, you understand vSphere, right? But not the same be said about Kubernetes. It brings in a whole new set of concepts that were developed inside of Google, and they were fairly advanced. So actually, what solutions like Rancher was able to do very early on was to just make Kubernetes easy to set up, easy to install, easy to operate, but probably the most importantly, easy to consume. So people, you know, just make Kubernetes easy. That's actually kind of our tagline for maybe the first 3 years of our company. The company is about 6 years old. Then the later 3 years, the more recent 3 years, we've actually been a lot more focused on enterprise-grade management. So it actually got to the point that people weren't just doing one Kubernetes clusters. They were sophisticated enough to, like, they want to make sure they separate development workload from production workload. They've got Kubernetes clusters on-premise. They've got Kubernetes clusters in the cloud. And some of the most advanced use cases we see today, people actually deploy Kubernetes in branch offices and in edge locations. Like an edge means like a gateway, you know, a surveillance camera. Literally, people are talking about deploying Kubernetes because they run face recognition software that involves fairly sophisticated AI stack that requires Kubernetes. So what happens is now you have these Kubernetes cluster everywhere. Not one of the greatest attributes of Rancher is it let people tame this cluster sprawl. Really, not just VM sprawl, container sprawl anymore. Now you've got these clusters of Kubernetes everywhere, and then ransom manage them all.
Well, let me ask you about that, this will be interesting, I think, because you talk about something like surveillance and analytics at the edge, and you know, that's a very popular conversation. That's been part of the smart cities conversation for years.
Yeah.
And it's getting to the point now where I think even Seagate last week launched an AI-enabled hard drive specific for video surveillance at the edge. So, you know, a lot of that's been done through NAS and hooking up some cameras and connecting into Milestone or whatever your NVR software is of choice, and then layering in some additional applications. You know, if you're a casino, maybe you've got different concerns than you're running, you know, a couple thousand convenience stores in terms of what you're looking for, right?
Yeah.
But you're talking about a really big shift in traditional enterprise architectures for something like surveillance that's been in play now for decades at this point, ranging from black and white CCTVs all the way to more modern infrastructures that would rely conceivably on Isilon or other big NAS platforms. They don't have to. I mean, obviously, you could use a QNAP or a Synology. But I sometimes wonder about where the development is going. And if the dynamic modern development is going to containers, do we start to get a fragmentation here, or is there an opportunity for fragmentation here based on businesses that adopt the newest, best, fastest, most nimble technology versus those that stay sort of on the tried and true platform? And do we get a chasm there between, you know, winners and losers with something like even something as simple, you know, arguably as simple as video surveillance?
I think so. I mean, I think like all industries, video surveillance is going through generations of technology, like you pointed out. And I think, you know, the vendors in the space, they all realize they have to keep up. So one area I'm specific, you know, I think Kubernetes doesn't directly handle media storage, right? But The reality is there's so much, you know, whether it's video or just high resolution media gets created, and the real time processing of it is actually becoming quite a bit of a challenge. And the you know, you gotta intelligently do, you know, pattern recognition or facial recognition, and a lot of that relates to the AI. And these days, a lot of AI software run on Kubernetes. That's why. Mm-hmm. And they weren't even designed to be run on an edge location. I mean, a lot of that AI software was probably originally designed to be run in large data centers or in clouds. But once they're, you know, mature enough, they do have a tendency to get, you know, become very popular, and then it certainly makes sense to sometimes really the cameras themselves. Sometimes it's not necessarily the camera directly, but the server, the first aggregation layer that connects, that these cameras, IP cameras, connect to. They'll need to do a lot of processing, and what Kubernetes allows them to do is to basically deploy these very sophisticated AI software stack and then be able to upgrade the software on the fly and really be able to enable these vendors to keep up with technology transition and retain their market share. So that's an industry that's a prime example of Kubernetes as part of edge computing that we're seeing.
Well, that's a good point, because it's the ongoing management, especially at the edge. And now that we're having more, and I mean, this isn't going to stop. We're having more smart devices distributed all over the world. I was talking to somebody just this morning about their CPAP machine that is internet connected and feeding data back to the doctor. And, you know, that thing could run a container. There's no reason why it couldn't. But to your point on serviceability, I think that's really interesting when you think about, if I've got these thousands of devices out there, cameras or data aggregators, whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. to be able to manage them quickly and effectively, rather than have somebody in the old days, you would have a tech go out there, physically connect a cable to a system and upgrade and kind of hope for the best times, you know, a couple hundred, maybe you can do that. But now, especially with the advent of faster connectivity with 5G, and we've heard so much about this for years, you know, that modality just doesn't work anymore, does it?
That's right. So the alternative solutions we're seeing, like some of the systems we're replacing, believe it or not, a lot of them tend to be Windows-based systems. They were Windows XP, Windows 7. I mean, so you kind of see the challenges, right? Because Windows XP was very good for 10 years. Then they've had to move to Windows 7. Now, after 10 years of Windows 7, it's out of support. So now that's a natural timeline for these guys to look for. I mean, none of those systems in the old days were clustered, and the modern systems tend to be clustered. So they Kubernetes is just the right technology for the right time.
So what do you think about some of the other concerns? So a Windows, box that gets patched theoretically every Tuesday and, is while it's in service is getting regular updates or could be getting regular updates if it's connected to the internet. Is security a big concern for containers? I personally worry a lot about data protection, but what about security? Yeah. Because as we know, hackers want in everything, right? That's what we're told on the news every single day. Someone's getting data stolen. Why not go after these applications, especially ones at the edge, and try to infiltrate those? What do you see in terms of what's being done from a security standpoint?
Yeah, I think containers is brought a lot to security, and that's actually a big selling point for containers and for Rancher. So in the old days, you have these applications deployed as executables or whatever, and then they're packages, and then they're installed and they're run. It's almost like running a little naked. What containers are able to do is it actually it's a really, really another layer of protection around your application. And then having Kubernetes have that running on Kubernetes actually brings in a whole new different level of protection at the runtime layer. So from the point your image is deployed, the image will get scanned. It's not just signed, but it'll get scanned, right? And then Kubernetes give you control about who can actually do the deployment. And after you've done the deployment, what can that image actually do? So even if it has a, let's just say, even if your image is compromised or corrupted, it just wouldn't really be able to do any damage. And then a Rancher we build on top to do things like identity and access management, making sure that people who are not properly authenticated can't even go into your system and deploy applications. So security is definitely becoming an increasingly important part of the whole software platform. And I think Kubernetes, Rancher, all these things are contributing to the enhanced security.
So talk to me a little bit about the landscape here. So, in the early days, there were a number of ways to go about getting containers and playing and getting online. And I know in the latest, Magic Quadrant or Forrester report or whatever it is, you guys are doing really well, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But there are plenty of other alternatives for container management. And I think sometimes the breadth of the market, I think, can be confusing, right? Because if there's a dozen alternatives, and especially, we're talking the week of VMworld, they're very noisy lately about Tanzu and some of the things that they're doing after many people in the early days thought containers could conceivably destroy VMware. Obviously, that hasn't been the case.
Yeah, VMware is going very strong with containers.
They are. So how do you view, let's just pick on VMware since everyone knows VMware. What's your view on how little old Rancher fights against the incumbent in virtualization, but also the company that has a lot of the customer relationships already?
Yeah, it's not really an exact game that we play. There's no the world of IT has changed a lot. I mean, if you look at, you know, two of our biggest competitors are probably two of the biggest companies in our space. One is VMware, the other is IBM with their acquisition of Red Hat, right? So these guys basically have all the customer relationships that you could think of. I mean, they also have a very, very deep engineering bench, you know, and so if you kind of look at, but then on the flip side, if you say, if an organization is actually looking to transform their IT, I mean, would you, you know, I think gone are the days that you can't get fired from buying from IBM or VMware. So at least we have a way in. But that said, I don't think philosophically, you know, these days people wouldn't evaluate a great solution next as we've proven, you know. So we got tremendous traction. But we do play our the game a little bit differently. So one thing we recognize is our whole point, as I've been explaining to you, was Kubernetes is the standard of TCP, like the standard of computing, like TCP/IP. So if you play that game, you got to make sure that you actually treat Kubernetes as a standard, meaning you actually support everyone's Kubernetes. Whereas VMware and IBM, they don't look at it like this. Like for them, getting into Kubernetes or getting into containers is basically a way to solidify their existing infrastructure footprint, right? Both are very, very strong infrastructure players. So they would say things like, I think I actually saw like last year, VMware came up with an article that says somehow running containers on VMware, like it's like 6% faster than running it without VMware. Like that is very typical of that kind of thinking. I mean, 6% is great, but if you, I mean, again, I use TCP/IP as an example. We don't necessarily want to be the manufacturer of every NIC card, you know, gigabit Ethernet card in the world, because those things are commodities. We don't have to make all the cables too. There's just plenty of opportunities for us to make routers, switches, you know, internet-enabled applications, maybe search engines. All these opportunities from our point of view are open, right? But you don't really fight the old game. So very concretely, one of the big difference between us and VMware and IBM is they're out there basically selling their own brand of Kubernetes combined with their management platform, whereas Rancher is the only solution in the industry that says Kubernetes is a commodity. We manage anyone's Kubernetes, including, I mean, we'll give you a Kubernetes cluster. Rancher's actually invented a technology called K3S that brought Kubernetes to the edge. So we're the leader on Kubernetes on the edge, but we're not the leader on Kubernetes in the cloud. In the cloud, you should just use cloud providers' Kubernetes distro because they provide it for free. They run it for you. And in the data center, Rancher has a great Kubernetes distro. But if you want to use VMware's distro, that's fine too. Because again, these are like Ethernet cards. I mean, you should be able to use whatever Ethernet card you want. They're expensive ones, cheap ones, but you use the one that's best for your purpose, right? And the whole point is, you use Kubernetes to avoid the locking, not to solidify the locking. So because of that,
just because you have an enlightened perspective. This may be a little bit different.
So because of that, Rancher, by the way, like even though we're a much smaller company, partly because we're 100% open source company, Rancher is by far the most widely used open source Kubernetes management platform, like far dwarfing any of the alternatives. And that's what keeping us honest. We want people to use this. And when they use it in production, then they sign an enterprise subscription agreement with us and they become our customers. So we don't have any shelfware, you know, we don't bundle. Like we can't play the game of, oh, you already have an enterprise agreement with us, therefore, why don't you just buy that? You know,
sure.
Overall cost. So we don't have any. So our business is completely adoption driven. It's completely bottom up, and it's just growing by over 100% year over year for many years. So,
well, so for Rancher itself, you talked about K3S, and I know you've got some other products, but from a consumption model standpoint, how do you bill that? What's the deal? Is it based on containers? What's it based on?
So Rancher, the whole thing is free, but if you want to sign up for basically an enterprise subscription, that entitles right. you to support. And today our support is calculated based on the number of nodes that you have that we actually manage. That's actually, again, a huge advantage from our customer perspective, because some of these bigger competitors, they're really under a fair amount of financial pressure. So they just to justify those sales forces and stuff like that. A lot of them have actually transitioned to a core based model, which, mm-hmm. which put them in a very bad position and put customers in a tough spot too.
Well, I mean, there's been quite the battle with VMware licenses recently for Intel versus AMD EPYC, CPU users, which is a challenge because now you're making customers think more than they probably would prefer to.
It's unnatural. You want customers to benefit and use this stuff. And
right.
and what we found is customers are very reasonable. They're more than happy to pay their fair share for sustaining the business, right? But you can't go overboard.
When decisions look arbitrary, I think that's when exactly. we all sort of
the worst part is you kind of let the licensing decision impact your architecture decision. So that would be right. very bad. Like people buy these very strangely configured machines, in order to save VMware license or something.
Well, sure. And now the CPU guys are making virtualization versions of the CPU. And so, they're sort of playing the game to the extent that they can. So in your world, I know you're not big on infrastructure, but I want to understand the Kubernetes impact on infrastructure. And so you've got some good perspective on this, I think. So you talked about, support being calculated on nodes. So I want to understand that concept a little bit. And then talk to me about what containerization of applications did or impacted, or the impacts you see on traditional enterprise infrastructure. Now in the cloud, I get it. It's easy to spin up within Amazon's container platform and have your things operating and be in good shape there. And maybe that's still, cloud is still the primary modality for consuming containers. But what about on-prem infrastructure as well?
Makes sense. So I'd say containers actually, especially Kubernetes, has a huge impact on infrastructure in the sense it actually helps to standardize it. So standardizing it has all kinds of consequences. So a lot of people say by standardizing, it basically makes different types of infrastructure looks consistent, right? Mm-hmm. But now it actually allows the workload to move wherever it wants to go. So in some cases, it might mean that what people used to be computing on-premise, now it's a lot easier to move to the cloud. That's definitely true. But we've also seen the reverse is also true, because in the early days, just a few years ago, really the cloud offered, pretty much the cloud is probably the only place that can offer a really good infrastructure as a code experience, like a really good DevOps enabled experience. Like on-premise, things are a little bit more static. You don't really get, auto-scaling. Like even CI/CD, everything is slower, right? So it wasn't possible. But now with Kubernetes, that whole thing is even richer and even more agile, even more efficient than EC2, than AWS. So you've effectively succeeded in replicating something even better than AWS on-premise, yet it's consistent with all the clouds, not just AWS. It's also consistent with Azure and Google. So we've actually seen that in some cases, especially in like high security situations, those guys won't even, like governments and intelligence agencies, those guys won't even be able to get to the cloud. Or there's been a big movement of workloads in even in air gap situations. You're not even connected to the network. But last but probably the most important is we see a very rapid growth of workload on the edge. And that, for us, the edge means the IoT gateways, branch offices, embedded devices, and in all of these places, you effectively like cloud everywhere. You know, you literally get to build a small cloud wherever you go, right? We have, you know, really literally people in the battlefield. They collect data and they will run it straight at the back of their armored vehicles. I mean, there's just stuff going on that's just truly, truly remarkable with Kubernetes actually running everywhere.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think hyperconverged has gone a long way to solve some of those infrastructure problems that you're talking about. So, I mean, we hear all the time about the, you know, ruggedized vSAN clusters for the back of the Humvee or whatever, right? Or oil and gas exploration is another one where they're collecting a lot of data out there, but need a reliable infrastructure that's resilient that is a lot harder to do with your traditional server storage networking kind of, you know, multi-tier infrastructure. And a lot of these guys have actually done a pretty good job of trying to capitalize on the container movement. So rather than resist it, NetApp, for instance, has done a pretty good job of trying to engage with containers. You know, I guess Deltek with Rail and some of the work through VMware is doing, you know, some stuff there too. But it brings up an interesting idea, and we've talked about it a little bit more before, earlier about, you know, where the management of containers happens and where the control plane is. I think if you talk to some of these infrastructure guys, they want to be part of the control plane for the containers. And that doesn't feel super natural to me.
That's very difficult. And in fact, all of these, like NetApp, all these infrastructure players, they're great partners of ours. So I think the best thing probably for them to do is like Dell partners with VMware, right? Dell also partners with us, you know? So it's fine. I mean, I think ultimately at the end of the day, they will partner with whatever solution that can bring them the most workload.
Right. So as the CEO of the company, you think more of them should partner with you?
No, I like that. I think they should. I mean, it all happens organically.
I'm just teasing you. That is interesting. And this push for containers at the edge, is there a point in time where you feel like that started happening more? Like I'm trying to understand on the timeline where you feel that switch happened.
It certainly happened. Maybe it was like 2 years ago, 2018, I think, June when we saw a blog coming out of all the places, Chick-fil-A, the restaurant chain, and they were deploying back then the Rancher Kubernetes engine, our distro. They deployed like in every one of their stores. They were experimenting the idea of running a few Intel NUC boxes, three boxes, and they would deploy a small Kubernetes cluster. And I think back then the idea was like just upgrading, because again, that's a typical case before they might be running something like Windows, right? So they wanted, you know, make it easier to upgrade the software, to maintain the software. So I honestly, I thought that was a truly inspiring story like a couple of years ago. And that led to a lot of our edge technology development, like K3M. So
in that case, was that for point of sale, or what sort of?
It's basically three servers deployed in every one of their restaurants. Every restaurant would have that server, so that kind of runs the commercial operation of that restaurant.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I know that we've seen a number of retail use cases where they're really struggling to be a little more dynamic in terms of the systems they're deploying, so that they don't have to have a server room. Nobody wants to give up space when you're paying, you know, those rates for retail to have
a
dedicated rack.
If you consumes electricity, and if you have a power outage, then a lot of times these things go down and never come up. Then you can't open your store. It just really to be rock solid, right? It has to be like work like a cable modem. You know, you lose power, it will act. So Kubernetes and Rancher K3S, these technologies really helpful.
Yeah, I'm curious how the Chick-fil-A thing worked out, because the NUCs are super cool. They've gotten more powerful now, even with GPUs and everything in them. But the attention to sort of this micro computing thing at the edge has gone through the roof. Lenovo's got a SE350. It's a little half-width server that you could fit in your backpack now. It's unbelievable, with a all sorts of flash storage in it, connectivity on the front. Exactly. You could put a wireless card.
We saw the HP version of it in IoT gateways. We were working with a lot of the manufacturing companies, and they were deploying this sort of stuff on the factory floor. So this is really remarkable.
Yeah, the gateway hardware itself is kind of interesting. I wonder how that will go if we see transition to more, you know, standard small servers or little micro PCs that are just a little more flexible in terms of what they can do and the number of devices they can support. But the innovation that's occurring on the hardware side is because of these workloads is really pretty interesting. And so I've let you talk only for 2 minutes about Rancher itself, and I know you've got a big release. You guys are up to 2.5 now in your code base. What's new?
Actually, pretty straightforward. You know, some of the big ticket items we're doing in 2.5 is we're making Rancher a lot easier to install, a lot easier to even bring up on any Kubernetes platform. We're enhancing our integration with EKS, the Amazon's Kubernetes as a service, because earlier I said Rancher is the only product that is really Kubernetes distro agnostic. And Amazon EKS is perhaps the most widely used Kubernetes service, because Amazon is basically number one in cloud. And then we're also coming up with a Kubernetes distro optimized for government. You know, it passes the FIPS certification, because just we see all kinds of use cases for Kubernetes in high security and government use cases. But last but not the least, I do want to talk about edge computing. So I just give you an idea how far we've gone with running Kubernetes and K3s on the edge. So with 2.5, we actually finally figured out how to manage tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. I think we're actually stress testing it to a million locations of potentially Kubernetes clusters running. I mean, a lot of these clusters though might be single node clusters. So you don't think about, you know, there are a million instances of, you know, 1,000 nodes. No, they're really just, you know, these will be like IoT gateways, right? So, or you know, telco equipment. So what's happening is in that kind of scale, it turns out you can't manage it in an old fashioned way anymore. We need to follow something called the GitOps framework. You basically like checking your desired state into Git, and then it leaves it up to Rancher to make sure all your edge locations get upgraded or get refreshed. So we worked on this GitOps at scale feature in Rancher 2.5. Really, really excited about that.
Well, it's interesting, and I know you guys are rolling out updates on a regular basis, and you've got something like 30 or 35,000 active users, which is impressive. What have you done to develop such a highly engaged and highly active community? Or maybe you haven't done anything and you just kind of stayed out of the way.
This is deliberate, because we have to make sure, like, we have to make Kubernetes easy to use. Even now, that is still probably our number one focus. You know, it's you know, gone are the days that IT products can sell features, because sell performance is difficult now, right? Because you know, it's not like back when NetApp had that features, EMC whatever had better features, that would have been easy, but
right. Well, and now they're all fast too, so
they all fast. And I think, you know, maybe it's an old playbook out of Apple or something. Like, people still like, they see a great product. They appreciate it. It spreads virally, and it has to do, I would say, even call it UX would be even undermining it. It's like it's a deep understanding of how this thing is going to be used and actually solve people's problem. You know, it's definitely a lot more than the UI, but you know, it's like you just make it usable so that people will use it every day. Then it doesn't, all of a sudden it doesn't matter. Like a lot of our customers, they're actually Red Hat and VMware customers. They've already bought Red Hat and VMware. They're paying for these things. Yet, you know, IT will buy it once, but then there will be 20 different groups in the same company actually be deploying Rancher and signing multiple deals with us, right? And eventually it propagates up to IT and we sign an enterprise-wide deal. So it happens a lot. The opportunity is truly huge.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're going in sort of guerrilla. It's not unlike Veeam back in the day when they started. Right. They were fundamentally different in the backup software space, and they would get a guy or a gal to put it on the credit card because it was inexpensive to go protect, you know, a couple VMs. And now, you know, years later, they've bubbled up into the broader IT org.
Yeah, those guys are brilliant. I mean, they really leveraged VMware to disrupt the backup space, right? And it was brilliant.
No, and you guys are after, you know, sort of a similar approach.
Yeah, we're leveraging Kubernetes, exactly.
Right. So talk to me, if you can. I know, you know, we've covered a lot of ground here, but for the next generation, let's think about the kids. I always do this because I'm a little bit selfish. I have a 17-year-old going into college, and I think about the next generation of workers that are coming out of college programs, or people that are using this time for voluntarily or not to sort of reskill themselves. We work a lot with the home lab communities on Reddit and support them by giving away a lot of our equipment. But for those audiences, for people that haven't yet engaged or want to engage with containers, how do you start? Where's a good place to go?
And it's more exciting now, like, because the old-fashioned way of starting would be the bar used to be so high. Like, you have to get some servers, you have to, you know, at least have a cloud account, but then you start paying. Like, even
right, that doesn't help students.
Even the Amazon free tier, it runs out very, very quickly, right? So Rancher is not about any of that. First of all, the Rancher, the whole thing is so light. The reason people like it is it installs on a laptop. So you just, you know, you have a VM running on a Windows laptop or a Mac or whatever. It'll just work. So that's fantastic. It is really an enterprise-grade solution that can scale down all the way down to a developer experience. So that's very popular. But what's even more exciting recently is because of our K3S technology, Rancher works on something as small as a Raspberry Pi. So you see all these devices. Rancher has a home lab channel, you know. So you see people are so creative. They're creating all these devices with just our employees. They're creating all these toys, basically with Rancher and Kubernetes running on top of it. And some of them are clusters, and some of them they look like an animal. You know, literally they're 3D printed, and inside it's a Raspberry Pi or like a number of Raspberry Pis. So there's a community of those kind of activities going on. It's really a lot of fun. That's a great way to get going with, you know, with Linux, with Kubernetes, with Docker. It's just a great way to get started.
We talked early on about applications being developed and consumed for the enterprise that would be container first, and or at least a container option. Do you see, are there some applications out there? So if I want to play with containers, but I'm not an app dev guy, are there some prepackaged applications that would be fun to play with in that sort of
environment? These days, everything is containerized now, like especially the open source projects, especially the popular open source projects. Like, you go to Docker Hub, I think that's still the definitive source for containerized applications. You know, from LampStack to WordPress to Drupal to even a lot of the very sophisticated ones. You know, I think even Oracle put their stuff on it now. So just everything is available. And the nice thing of deploying them as containers is, like, you literally do it in one shot. It's like, you don't have to read a complicated installation manual, right? You got it up and running with one.
Well, and you guys are doing a lot of education online too now with meetups and videos and streams and all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah, you go to a rancher.com website. There's a lot of that stuff going on. We also have a free certification program. It's been tremendously popular. I mean, thousands of people. We've only launched it for a few months, a couple of months, I think. But thousands of people, I think, have gone through the certification. And I didn't expect people would do that because it's actually fairly advanced, fairly involved. You know, you really need to learn the concepts of Kubernetes. But it's like the Cisco, you know, CDNA kind of stuff. But there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on.
Well, I mean, that's strong, though. I mean, if we are dealing with all the issues we're dealing with now, the only way you can, as an individual, ensure your own success is to continue self-improvement. And so, you know, if we're not using this time to get better, then I think we're probably doing it wrong.
That's right.
Honestly. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. I greatly appreciate you taking an hour and walking through what I know some of this is very basic, but I think there's still so much unknown about how to properly leverage containers. And so hearing from experts like yourself that have been around and seen this and seen it at a global scale, I think is the other thing too, because you know, we're not just talking about one enterprise with a handful of apps. You guys are experiencing customers all over the world that are trying to address these concerns and how to organize containers across multiple clouds and different geos, because they're not all created equal. So, you know, containers, I think in that regard can be a great equalizer at scale. But again, I just really appreciate you taking the time and being with us today.
Thank you. And I hope also, you know, more than the engineering and technology angle was tremendously exciting. I think I always tell people, folks who, you know, who are entrepreneurial, thinking of developing new products, it is possible. It is always possible. It is still possible that for a little company to just start from nowhere and actually play in the equal ground with folks like, you know, with great companies like IBM and VMware and, you know, aspire to be the next. So,
I love that mentality. I love the message, and you're absolutely right. You can go out and do it and innovate and be better, and no better way than to leave on that note. Thanks again. Loved having you on.
Thank you, Brian.